There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I hope you had a wonderful sports equinox weekend, everybody. It's your Yahoo Sports Canada daily podcast for Monday, October 28th. But first, sports. Good morning and happy Monday to you. What a weekend in sports. It was coined the sports equinox. We got action from all four of the major sports on the same day and plenty of other stuff as well. Last night alone had a little bit of everything for everybody. No time to waste. Let's get right into it. There was regular season NBA action, hockey games, week 8 in the NFL, and game 5 of the World Series all on Sunday alone. The groove left by your butt on your couch probably got a quality workout this weekend, I would guess, and hopefully your delivery guy got a good tip as well. And now we are back to the work week, and we are back to looking back at the sports that were happening on the weekend. The Raptors squeeze in a pair of games in the weekend, going back-to-back on Friday and Saturday night. On Friday, Raptors took a loss at the hands of the Boston Celtics. Pascal Siakam started out slow, and people spent the first quarter and a half sort of quietly unloading all their doubts about his play as a first option on a team. But he poured it on strong the rest of the way. He finished with 33 points, 8 rebounds on the night. Kyle Lowry, very sharp as well. He had 29 with 7 dimes. The issue was that nobody besides Serge Ibaka's 13 finished the game in double digits. And the bigger story was the Raptors' issues rebounding and with turnovers. The C's pulled down 21 offensive boards. And when you combine that with the uncharacteristic 23 turnovers from Toronto, the Celtics ended up attempting 31 more shots than the Raptors, which more than makes up for the fact that they shot just 38.5% from the floor. There was no rest for Toronto, who turned right around and headed to Chicago to play the Bulls the very next night. It was a much better story against a much worse team on Saturday. The Raptors cruised most of the way to a 108-84 win in that one. Balanced scoring attack, the harbinger of success. In this game, Siakam had 19, Ibaka had 18, Van Vliet had 16, Kyle Lowry had 11, 7, and 8. And the real standout performer from Saturday was OG Anunoby. He posted a 17-6-4 line. The 4 was blocks, 4 blocks. He was electric on both ends of the floor. His rejections were all highlight reel stuff. Generally, running amok up and down the court, OG Anunoby. To join me this morning to break it all down from the Raptors weekend that was, from The Athletic, it's Blake Murphy. You know him, you love him. The number one done in Raptors coverage. Blake, one good game, one bad game. What are your takeaways from the Raptors weekend that was?
Who cares about the Raptors? The Raptors 905 Media Day is on Monday morning. Come on, man. That's that's where the real action is. You want to talk about Tyler Ennis and Saga Bakanate? Let's go. I think if you're looking for takeaways from the weekend, the biggest one that stands out, turnovers I'm not as worried about. The Raptors, the entire time, this isn't entirely Kyle Lowry's doing, but since they've gotten Lowry, they've never been even a league average team turning the ball over. They've always protected the ball well, and I think that that's something they can clean up pretty naturally. I do not see the team being a good defensive rebounding team. Marcus Gasol and Serge Ibaka are both, you know, okay defensive rebounders for centers. Siakam's a pretty good defensive rebounder. Over 2 years, OG is not a great defensive rebounder for his size and position. They're starting 2 point guards right now, which Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry are both above average rebounders for the position, but you're still starting 2, point guards who, until the NBA certified those heights, we assumed were under 6 feet tall. We're now told they're 6 feet and 6'1", which makes me over 6 feet tall, which is great. But I think that's the big concern coming out of that split and that loss to Boston, is that this is probably not a team that's going to rebound any better than average. And that means there are going to be frustrating nights.
On the plus side, OG Anunoby was really the story of Saturday. What did you like about what you saw from OG over the weekend?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously if you can get 17 points from the guy who's supposed to be your fifth starter, you're in really good shape. And I've been impressed with how OG's offensive game looks so far. But the big thing that stood out was he blocked four shots. And that's, you know, it's one game. Four block shots is not something that you can now book him in for every night. Maybe not even one or two. But I thought the way that those block shots came about, even if you look back to the opener, he blocked two shots in the opener, both as a help defender, helping off of someone on the perimeter to make something happen at the rim. And you look at the four blocks he had against Chicago, three of those were in transition, and they weren't chase down blocks. They were, I'm going to come off my man and meet this guy in transition at the rim. And I think those are the type of blocks that, one, they speak to he's reading the game at a high level. Two, it speaks to his bounce and his athleticism is where it needs to be after, you know, a couple of years dealing with coming back from the ACL tear out of college and then last year dealing with myriad injuries. And then I think it just, like, it speaks at least some degree to his confidence level where he's comfortable leaving his guy to try to make plays happen. And, you know, they don't need him as much on offense, but if he can be that guy on defense, if he can be locking down opposing teams' primary scores and helping on defense around the rim and in the paint, that's a huge addition to his defensive game. We've always been pretty optimistic about his defensive potential. That's a new wrinkle that, like, I don't think many people saw being added to OG's game. Like, he can be a lockdown guy one-on-one, but if he can also be a factor as a help defender, that's a huge addition as well.
Now, not to, you know, check the ex's Instagram here, but Kawhi Leonard with the Clippers has looked very, very good. They lost to the Suns, though, so, you know, grains of salt. Yeah. What have you thought of the beginning of the Clippers season and his fit?
Yeah, the big thing for me, first of all, they're operating without Paul George, right? So anything the Clippers are doing right now, you also have to drop in, hey, this guy who was an MVP candidate last year is also getting dropped back into this. But I think that, you know, Clippers-Lakers was the most informative in that it really highlighted how much deeper the Clippers are. No disrespect to Summer League God Alex Caruso, but the Lakers are relying a lot on Summer League God Alex Caruso. The Clippers have depth. They have Lou Williams coming off the bench. They have Patrick Beverley to defend. Montrezl Harrell is a great pick and roll partner for Lou or for Kawhi or for Paul George or whoever. They've got some pieces. The biggest thing that stood out to me, though, was, you know, we talked at times last year about how, oh, Kawhi's back to being a superstar scorer. He's got that gear when he decides in the fourth quarter to lock down defensively. But, you know, he's not playmaking like a superstar yet. And he's never really had that element to his game. And it got better during the playoffs. But for him to come out and set a career high in assists in his very first game as a Clipper with nine dimes without Paul George. And it's like, oh, shit. Like, if this guy has another level, like I didn't pick him for MVP because I don't know if he's going to play enough games, but like if he plays 70 games and he looked like he looked opening night, he's going to win MVP. Like if he's not only scoring that much and that efficiently, and then you add that, oh, suddenly he's a superstar level playmaker too. It's, I mean, he was already one of the toughest checks in the league, and now he's one of the most dynamic and versatile as well.
After taking Sunday off, the Raptors are at it again tonight. They take on the Orlando Magic at home in Toronto. Orlando 1-1 on the season. They beat the Cavs opening night and had a close loss to the Atlanta Hawks on Saturday. Tip off for that game, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time tonight. Call it a rematch, if you will, of the first round of last year's NBA playoffs. The Raptors, not the only team in Toronto, saddled with a back-to-back on Friday and Saturday over the weekend. The Maple Leafs, who seem to be playing back-to-backs like every time they play. They hosted the Sharks on Friday night and turned around to head to Montreal for Hockey Night in Canada against the Habs on Saturday. It started out on the good foot. Maple Leafs, who had Freddie Anderson in net, I might add, in Game 1. They did it more than enough to seal a 4-1 win, taking 2 points on the front half of the two games. Jake Muzzin, Morgan Riley, Ilya Mikheyev, and Austin Matthews all picked up goals in that game. That was really just an example of a talented team overpowering a Sharks team that had a lot working against them coming into it. The Sharks on a second half of a back-to-back of their own, not to mention a West Coast team in the East. Plus, well, they just aren't off to a good start this year and haven't had good goaltending in a while. Let's just say a while. So the Leafs, all that momentum, then go to Montreal to face their longest-running rivals, and it was a dud for the Buds. A 5-2 loss on Hockey Night in Canada, and really just a frustrating 60 minutes of hockey for the Maple Leafs. The Canadiens had the jump on them most of the game, most of the way, and the consensus from most observers, and me, I'll say it, was the relative inactivity from Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner. They were a little invisible, and when they were visible, they weren't great in that one down the stretch. Jonathan Drouin scored twice for the Habs. Brendan Gallagher, Nick Suzuki, and Joel Armia added goals of their own for Montreal. The Canadiens made a laugher out of it in Hockey Night in Canada. The Maple Leafs back at it again on Tuesday. They have a date at home against the Washington Capitals. The Caps currently on top of the Metro Division right now. They're 8-2-3 out of the gate. They won the first meeting between these two teams about 2 weeks ago, October 16th, if you remember. Elsewhere on the ice this weekend, there was an outdoor game on Saturday. Did you know that? Do you have any idea that was happening? Because I sure didn't. The Calgary Flames and Winnipeg Jets played an outdoor game in Regina, Saskatchewan, where I must point out it is already snowing. It was 2-1 win in OT for the Jets, if you're wondering. Adam Lowry of the Jets will have a disciplinary hearing for a hit to the head late in the second period of that game. What would an outdoor game be without a questionable hit to the head? Like I said off the top, sports equinox over the weekend, and that includes three games from the World Series in 3 days. Last time we talked, on Friday, we had Hannah Kaiser on the show from Yahoo Sports MLB. The Nationals were up 2-0. Everything was looking great. They were heading home for the first World Series games in Washington since 1933 and the first ever for the Nationals franchise. And that story is over. Completely different now. The Astros won 4-1 in Game 3 on Friday. They won 8-1 in Game 4 on Saturday to tie the series up. And then we came into Sunday, spent most of the day expecting just this excellent pitching matchup, the best you could possibly hope for. Gerrit Cole against Max Scherzer. But about 4:30 Eastern time, about 4 hours before first pitch, we heard that Scherzer would be unable to make the start due to literally a pain in the neck. And he is one of those guys. He's a gamer through and through. He's fired up. He's dedicated. He's fiery. He plays through everything. So you know it had to be pretty bad. They threw in Joe Ross, sort of last-minute addition, Joe Ross. He pitched okay. He went 5 innings, gave up 4 runs with a pair of 2-run homers. It was enough to keep the Nats in the game for a while, but it was not enough to change the scoreline in any way. Gerrit Cole, too good, and he has been too good basically all year long. No fault there. The Astros win Game 5, 7-1. The Nats score 3 runs in 3 games at home. Not what you want if you're a fan of the Nationals, finally getting to see a World Series game. Now we head back to Houston for Game 6. The Astros have a chance to win their second World Series in 3 years, while the Nats just try to hold on. And just because all four major sports were in action on Sunday, that doesn't mean that's all there was. There was even more sports than just those with the major four. Tiger Woods won the Zozo Championship in Japan yesterday. And normally we would not be talking about the Zozo Championship, even if it was Tiger. But it was his 82nd career PGA Tour victory. That pulls him into a tie with Sam Snead for the most victories, tournament victories, that is, all time in PGA Tour history. He finished the day 19 under par. He is one tournament away from being the winningest golfer in PGA Tour history. Who else but Tiger Woods would hold that honor? One more win, and it's all his. And finally, whew, that's a lot of sports. That's a lot of sports to talk about in one morning. Finally, this morning, Bianca Andreescu plays her first match at the WTA Finals. She is going up against former world number one and the player she grew up idolizing, Simona Halep. The tournament, if you don't know about it, really cool setup. The top 8 seeds in women's tennis are split into 2 groups of 4. They play round robin against each other. Everybody plays everybody once in your group. And then the top 2 of each group face off. The winners of that play for the title. A neat wrinkle, a nice change up versus single elimination tournaments, and Bianca, as the 4 seed, is making her first appearance in this event. She had a great, great record this year against top 10 opponents, and that will be put to the test against 7 of the best players in the world. Something fun to watch in the mornings over the rest of the week, and that starts this morning. And that's all the time there is for this morning's show. Holy cow, that was a lot of sports to talk about in just a few short minutes. And it doesn't stop. We are still rolling forward. We're in the heart of the sports calendar. The Raptors back at it tonight against the Orlando Magic. Tip off for that game, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. I will be right here to talk to you about it and to recap everything else from the world of sports tomorrow morning. In the meantime, until we talk next, get out there, start your week right, and enjoy your Monday.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.